Good morning. When we started looking in this series, didn't realize how hard it was going to be. Last week, the topic of suicide, what the Bible says about it, what hope there is. There's so many people we've talked to since then that have had loved ones that have taken their own lives. Some here that have struggled with suicidal thoughts and just not know what to do with it. So that was a tough topic. This one has been even more difficult to prepare for, this whole topic of sexual abuse. And we're at a time, I don't remember another time, and I mean, everyone says that and every generation says it, but I don't remember a time where I've been in the midst of a movement where power has been coalesced by people that for the longest time felt powerless to speak out and to confront abuse that has happened in every arena you can think of. You know, it's happened in the workplace, in entertainment industry, if it's in the military, our schools, sports, politics, families, and in the church. Me Too movement has not been a flash in the pan. It started in 06, Tarana Burke's. Burke was meeting with a young teenager that had been abused, and when the young girl talked about it, Burke realized, this has happened to me too, but didn't say anything. And after that, she decided that from then on, whenever the opportunity was there, that she could identify with someone that had been abused, she was going to say, me too. When Harvey Weinstein allegations started coming out, the phrase me too began to be adopted. And there's been an avalanche of people that have come out, men and women, that have talked about the abuse they've had. And in most cases, many cases, it's just been kept under wraps out of shame and fear. And hopefully there'll be some good things that continue to come from it. So we're going to address that, not so much the Me Too movement, but this idea of sexual abuse. And don't take this lightly at all. Some of you are going to be disappointed because you just don't want to hear about all this. All the more reason for us to talk about it. So I want to set the stage. I want to talk about a few things that are basic for us that are followers that help us to approach any topic. We want to see what does the Bible say first, and that becomes our framework. So I want to look at what the Bible says about this whole idea of sex. Just take a few minutes, and we're going to look at the sexual abuse thing. So one of the things that we know for certain is that God created humans with the capacity for sexual intimacy, and this was both for procreation and for pleasure. Bible's really clear that God created everything in the universe, the big things, the little things. He created with such intricacy that you can take the Hubble telescope and you're still trying to figure out how many galaxies they are and how big those galaxies are. And we see light years away. I mean, it's pretty remarkable just how expansive the universe is. You can take an electron microscope and you can see whole universes in particles that you and I would never see with our naked eyes. And there's an intricacy, there's a kind of a cohesive design to all this that most would say that there's some, even if they're not believing in God, there's some kind of design behind this. It'd be hard to describe this as just having been accidental. The Bible tells us that God is the creator. It doesn't tell us all the details of how, it just says he is, and that he created the world with purpose, and the crown of his creation was human beings. We, of all things he created us in his image to reflect something about him. It says in Genesis, it says he created them male and female. He created us in his image. So if I want to understand the image of God, not that we're gods, but somehow I have to look at the combination of male and female. There's something about this that is really important, which is another reason he created marriage the way he did. So there'd be this testimony of something about God. And we're unique in all of creation in that we have responsibility for the world. And unlike dandelions and Dobermans, we have a responsibility that we need to take seriously because we're created in his image. And the way he designed it is that male and female, they complement each other. And I think, quite honestly, I think God did a phenomenal job in his creation. I really like the whole male-female thing. And get this. He allowed us to be able to reproduce, and he made it fun. I mean, he could have done all kind of different ways. He could have said, well, when you hit a certain age, a box will be delivered at your door. I mean, there's all kind of ways he done it. But he created it to where there's fun involved in it. I mean, he in the midst of everything, I mean, he did a remarkable job. And like we do with everything, we've corrupted it. Our sin, mine and yours, has corrupted the beauty God created in every aspect you can think of. The world was created by him beautifully, yet he gave us the freedom to make some choices, but not choices without consequences. And what's happened is our decision to go our own way, which is what the Bible calls sin, has taken the beauty and has distorted it and broken it in many ways. For everyone has sinned, it says in Romans. Everyone has sinned. We all fall short of God's glorious standard. And in that fall, we set in motion forces that have caused all kind of problems. And we can still see beauty, but we can still see the brokenness and the corruption, and we feel it. For instance, we've got musicians up here. We've got some that are really good musicians that can play guitar. And they can take a guitar, and with their hands they can make some music that lifts us up and allows us to feel and sense things that we wouldn't otherwise. But those same hands, I'm not accusing anyone up on stage here, but those same hands that can create beautiful music can beat someone to a pulp. It's a choice made. We have singers up here. We have singers that have great voices, and we've already heard them. We're going to hear them later. And they're able to take words and put them with a melody, and they can lead you and I to worship the Creator God that loves us dearly, and it can remind us of what's really true, and it ushers us into his presence in a way that is unique. But those same voices can gossip and slander and lie and cause all kind of harm. This is the world we live in. There's beauty, but there's this utter brokenness too. And that's why God invented his church. And this is not against anyone that's watching us online, but I'm saying that God never intended his church to be something that we would occasionally show up and have an event with. He wanted us to be vitally connected to each other in true community, where there's a genuine kind of connectedness that we have. And what we can do is we can support and challenge and correct each other and help each other not stray. Listen to what it says in Hebrews 3:13. It says, you must warn each other every day while it's still today, so that none of you will be deceived by sin and hardened against God. There's never a point where we're not in danger of falling into the consequences of our sin and our rebellion, our just desire to have things our way. So let's get back to sex. I've never said that in church until last night. And my daughter was here too, which we had a discussion after that. She goes, Dad, don't ever say that again. I did. Sexual abuse is rampant in our nation and in our world. It is rampant. Center for Disease Control, they use a definition, and I'm going to use these interchangeable: sexual abuse, sexual violence. There are a variety of terms that are used. They use the term sexual violence, and they describe that as any sexual activity where consent is not obtained nor given freely. If you want to look at other ways to expand on that, sexual abuse happens when someone misuses their power. It could be physical, it could be financial, it could be positional authority. Sexual abuse happens when someone misuses their power to gratify their own desires at the expense of another, through pressure, coercion, or threats. And it is happening all around us. According to the CDC, and these numbers, I guarantee you these numbers are really low, but this is the reported numbers. According to the CDC, 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men will experience some form of sexual violence in their lifetime. I am convinced these numbers are super low. I'm not the only one. But a big reason why these numbers are low is because people that have been sexually abused are so hesitant to ever come forward with it. That's why the Me Too movement has been such a shock to the system. Because it's been going on for a long time, but those that are in power do everything they can to suppress the powerless. And so this is a serious, whether you want to use the term epidemic or not, it is really serious. And many of you do, along with me, know many men and women, adults and children, who have finally opened up about their pain and the fear and the shame of sexual abuse. And there's something about it that is, there's no way you can take this flippantly. Especially, it's one thing to read about it, it's another to know someone and to hear their story and what they've been through and the agony that they've been through for so long. Many have developed coping mechanisms that are designed to hide their pain or to numb them from it, to keep the brokenness at bay. You'll discover over time that some of the people around you that seem caught up in addictions or promiscuity or other kind of out of control things, if you get beneath the surface, you're going to find that a lot of it's driven by this shame and this guilt and this burden that they've borne from sexual abuse. Some of the most successful people I know that would qualify as workaholics and at the top of the game are driven to hide the pain and all they felt from sexual abuse. There's anxiety, there's rage, there's an inability to connect with others that people have. Dan Allender, one of the authors that I really respect, has done a lot of work on this, especially women dealing with sexual abuse. He said there's three broad categories of how women tend to respond to sexual abuse. You have the good girl, you're gonna be compliant and get along with everyone just to keep the peace. You have the tough girl, no one is going to ever hurt me again. And you have the party girl. I'm going to go and I'm going to have fun because this is the only thing I have any control over right now. I think the same kind of profile fits for men. Those of you that have experienced sexual abuse, you've developed your own way of dealing with the pain and the shame and the loss and the loneliness. And I'm going to tell you, it can be crushing. I want to strongly encourage you, if you know you've had this, that sexual abuse is part of your story, that you would get some help. I've got two books in your take-home sheet when you leave today. Both of these are mentioned in here. This is On the Threshold of Hope, highly recommended by Diane Langberg. And then this is Healing the Wounded Heart by Dan Allender. You can get these on Amazon. We don't have them here, but it's easy to get a hold of. I want to encourage you to get one of these, get both of them. Study it, look at it, and then take some steps to where you can begin dealing with this so that it doesn't just play havoc with you the rest of your life. Sexual abuse needs to be attacked with truth and love, not just anger and outrage. It's appropriate to be angry about this. It's appropriate to be outraged, but to really make a difference, we need to attack it with truth and love. Hiding, pretending, covering up will not do anything but create more harm. And the power of Jesus, and this is something those of us that know him understand this, the power of Jesus is found when I face reality while embracing him, or at least believing he's embraced me. Larry Crabb, who's one of my favorite counselors and writers, has said that being a follower of Jesus means I no longer have to pretend about anything because I don't go it alone. And there are things that you and I, if we're not careful, we carry in our past and we haven't approached them with truth or love. We've gone out of fear and hiding. In our church, in our homes, in our workplace, in neighborhoods and schools, we need to be those people that offer truth and love, and we need to pursue it, and we need to sound it out clearly. Some of the ways this looks is that we're not going to be judgmental of those that claim to have been abused or those that claim that someone is named someone abuser. We're not going to be judgmental about that. You know, it's easy to do this. I hate even admitting this, but I remember the first years ago when I first heard there were some accusations against Bill Cosby. My first thought, someone's after his money. He's a great guy. I don't know the guy at all. But I thought I did because I watched him on TV and I'd heard his albums back when he was just doing comedy. And I thought, of course not. But I'm going to tell you, there's a preponderance of evidence that this guy is a scumbag. But I didn't want to hear it. And I know someone's going to write me and say, I shouldn't say scumbag in church. I edited what I was thinking. But I'm going to tell you, we've got to be careful about this. So there's an accusation. We need not to rush to a judgment, but we need to remind ourselves to keep the truth and love in perspective here. There are some things you and I are never going to know about accusations. I don't know Harvey Weinstein. There seems to be a lot of evidence that he's in the camp that I've put Bill Cosby in. But I mean, we need to be careful with this, and we need to not discount those that claim to have been hurt, nor those that have been accused. We need to be careful with that. We need to pursue what is true, what is right. And we need not rush to judgment in any way. We need to embrace the truth of God's purposes. Let me shift for a minute. We need to embrace the truth of God's purposes for sexual expression. And that means we need to know if God is our creator and designer, what has he said about this? And I need to get it, I need to understand it, and I need to make that how I live my life and what I support and what I endorse. And parents, and the rest of us, quite honestly, we need to teach this to our children too. I'm afraid too many times what we've done is we've allowed the internet, we've allowed peer groups, we've allowed everyone else to co-opt the messages because we don't want to look out of place and too counterculture or uncool. And I'm going to tell you, the time for being cool is long past if we're followers of Jesus. Our culture's current mindset is this, is to believe that we all have the right to sexual freedom and exploration and expression without any boundaries. This is what you're hearing constantly. This is what your kids are hearing. This is the message that's all around us. And I'm going to tell you, the problem is this so-called freedom is creating all kind of major problems. It's created sexual confusion, significant rise in STDs. And when I say STDs, I'm not talking about just the ones it's happening in middle and high school, and in some cases elementary. This is happening in retirement communities, where this whole mindset of just do whatever you feel like doing. As long as I feel I want to, I ought to. And it's just like gravity. You can defy it, but you are going to pay a price. There's an addiction to pornography that is now happening to our young children because they have exposure to it, sometimes accidentally, and then they get intrigued by the forbidden. And it is creating all kind of harm to our boys and girls as well as adults. I was reading, I read the Washington Post most days, and Christine Emba had written an article, and it's really interesting. She had been on a college campus where the college campuses are trying to wrestle with this whole thing. They say, you have freedom, but what does that mean? What does it mean to have consent? How do you know you've gotten consent? And she writes this in the Post. It's really interesting. She goes, our society is good at calling out bad behavior, but we're not in agreement on what is good behavior. We don't have anything to go to for this. We don't have anything to appeal to. Those of us that are followers of Jesus, God has given us his word. He's given us the Bible so we can have the manufacturer's understanding of how we're created so we know how to operate. She said, we need to find an approach that treats others with dignity and respect, not just trying to push them to give me the consent word. She goes, the problem with that is that what we're doing is, if we're not careful, if we're being really honest, if we're trying to get someone to say yes so we can gratify our own desires, we're not really treating them with the respect and dignity they deserve. We've still got this selfish agenda. That's what is our sin problem, is I want what I want when I want it the way I want it. And we're not making much headway. God knew how powerful sex is, and he gave us some protections so that we could keep it good, because he knows how powerful it is and how destructive it can be if we misuse it. And his standards are simple. I would love to have this tattooed on everyone's eyelids. One man, one woman, united in marriage. That's it. And some of you are thinking, this guy is old and stupid. I don't care what you think of me. I really do care what's going on in the world around us. And how many people, even in the church, buy these lies. And they go after the freedom, and then they find out they're in bondage. Can you imagine? I wish you would do this and tell me what you come up with. Can you imagine what would happen if all of us in the United States today decided we're going to go with God's standard for at least one generation? Can you imagine what would happen and what would fade away? But we're not doing that. And it's causing us harm. And we need to be careful. We need to be wise. We need to set up guardrails of protection, individually and collectively. I think it's fascinating, and again, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I don't understand why you drive on a parkway and park in a driveway. The words seem odd to me. And why the most limited access roads in our country are called what? Freeways. First of all, it costs a fortune around here to be on the freeways. And the other thing is, it's really hard to get on and off of them. It's extremely limited access. They're called freeways because you have freedom on it. The chaos has been removed. There's not all these thousands of ways, however anyone feels like they can just get on and get off whenever they want to. It's a freeway. It's giving me freedom. There is no freedom without boundaries. There never is, just chaos. And so what you and I need to do is figure out what are some healthy guardrails in our lives and in our institutions so we can protect ourselves from the dangers, in this case, of sexual expression going awry and creating all kind of harm. In Job 31, it's a great verse, and I've encouraged a lot of men to join me in this and just using this as kind of a personal mode of operation. It says, I have made a covenant with my eyes not to look with lust upon a girl. It's just a simple statement. What that means is it's okay to appreciate beauty, just don't undress the women you see. And there are guardrails that we need to have, and I'm just giving you a handful of those. Limit access to things that tempt you. And if you have trouble with your phone and on the internet, put one of those monitors on it. Or I'll give other people permission to check all your history anytime. We need to have systems that are in place that where if something is out of bounds, someone can call it before it gets so far out of whack. There need to be situational boundaries. I think it was laughable and then frustrating that people made fun of our Vice President, Mike Pence, because he adopted what has been called for years the Billy Graham rule, where he won't be alone with another woman that's not his wife. Wow, that guy is such a prude. Now he's really smart. Eliminate the temptation areas for you and others. And I want to tell you this too, in so many cases where sexual abuse has happened, especially on campuses, but not just there, alcohol. I have never heard anyone tell me they've done anything smart when they were under the influence of alcohol. I'm not saying that you should not drink. I don't. I think there are good reasons not to, but I'm just going to say, if you are drinking in excess, you're setting yourself up. Be careful. We need to have healthy guardrails. I'll get a couple of more things here in a moment, but let me move to these last two things. We need to create safe places for victims of sexual assault. We need to create safe places for them. The Me Too movement has opened the door, but we need to work hard at this. And as his church, we need to follow the way God operates with others. Listen to Psalm 9. It says, the Lord is a shelter for the oppressed, a refuge in times of trouble. That's what we need to build. That means us individually and us collectively as a church. We need to be a safe community for people to find understanding, care, hope, and healing. And we need to be ready to do that and embrace the mess that's going to inevitably happen when people begin to be open about it. We've seen this before. We want to continue to see it. Some who have been sexually abused blame God for allowing it to happen. And you and I need to be His ambassadors, helping them to know that God does care, so much so that He came into this broken, screwed up world and was abused Himself in so many ways. He took all kind of hits, so we know He understands it. And then He sacrificed His life so you and I could have our sin forgiven, that tendency that leads to all the brokenness. Not only does He care, He came for us. And He doesn't give up on those that are messy and those that are struggling, those that are angry. We need to be His ambassadors and help people see it. A safe place means that we're going to allow it to be messy, we're going to allow people to struggle, and we're going to give them a chance to process and work through the hurt and the anguish they've been through. And I want to say this real clearly, because some of us fall into this pattern, is if we're not careful, we'll push someone to get over it too quickly. Well, you just need to forgive whoever did it and move forward. Whenever you put the word just in front of something, be really careful, because you're probably minimizing it. The two things we have to watch out for is immediately pushing someone to out someone that has done it, and then immediately move into forgiving. Is it because we tend to do that because we can keep the mess quiet? When you go to the hospital and you've got a wound that's infected, they don't immediately stitch it up to get you out. Well, they might some places. Don't go there. They want to get the infection out first and then stitch it up. And it's messy and it's painful and it's hard. But it's the only way you will heal well. You cannot get over what you haven't gone through. And people that have gone through sexual abuse, we need to walk with them through it and not push them too quickly into outing someone or forgiving. These are called for in many cases, but they're not required to get help and to be made whole. There is no simple way, no 1-2-3 process for healing, but it is possible. And God, I want to tell you, God promises to anyone who will come to Him and surrender to Him that He will help them heal. He will forgive. He will restore. He will strengthen. He will take away the shame. It just requires being open to Him, asking for His help, and surrendering to let Him. When this service is over, I'm going to invite anyone here that may have experienced sexual abuse or is struggling with this in some way, just to stay in here and pray. There'll be a handful of people from our prayer team near the front if you want someone to pray with you. But I want to encourage you, don't run from Him. And He can handle your anger and your frustration. I also want to say this too. We want to be a safe place for people who have abused others but are admitting it, owning it, and are going to be repentant of it. Some of you have lived with this guilt for years because you know you've done wrong and you've hidden it, you've buried it. God will accept you if you will humbly come to Him and admit what you've done wrong and ask for help and be willing to turn from it and turn and repent, whatever that takes. And we want to be a safe place for anyone that will surrender and humble themselves to Him. But mark my words on this too. We need to, and we will work diligently to create an unsafe place for unrepentant abusers. Ephesians 5 says, carefully determine what pleases the Lord. Take no part in the worthless deeds of evil and darkness. Instead, expose them. And that's in our homes, our workplace, our neighborhood, and schools, and especially in Jesus' church. It sickens me, and it frustrates me, and it makes me angry, and I'm ashamed at times of how people that have been victimized in the church have been re-victimized by not having advocates that come and help them and offer them hope and healing. And for the sake of protecting a reputation of an institution or individuals, the church has been silent and buried it. That is not Jesus' way. And any of you have been treated that way, I am sorry. I am deeply sorry. And I will promise you that we are committed at New Hope. We're not a perfect church, But we're going to learn everything we can. We're not going to be pointing fingers at how others have screwed up. We're going to say, what do we need to do to be a safe place? And God forbid if something happens, let's address it with integrity and honor, regardless of what it does to our reputation. Micah 6:8 says, O people, the Lord has told you what is good, and this is what he requires of you, to do what is right, to love mercy and walk humbly with your God. We need to be committed to be a place where we're going to do what is right in God's eyes, whether the culture applauds us or not. We want to be a place of hope and healing. We want to be a safe place for those that have been harmed, those that have caused it, that are willing to repent of it, but we will not be a safe place for those that decide they want to come here and hide and believe that we could be complicit with it. We will not be. I want you to listen to this next song and let it be, open your eyes to what God offers. Let it be a prayer, and then we'll come back together.